Hello?
Hello, hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Oh, okay, I was wondering if anybody was here yet. This is
One? Am I alone? Hello?
Hello, this is Fran.
Hello.
Okay, I thought it was very quiet out there. How are we all doing this evening?
Good.
Good.
Great.
Very well.
Hi, Dave.
Let me get a quick attendance here. Kevin.
Hi, good evening.
How about, there he is. Okay, how about Francis?
Yep, I'm here, Fran Monaco.
And Rochelle? How about Selena?
I'm here.
Good. And Michelle? David?
Here, Dave.
There he is. And Phyllis? How about Gary?
Gary is here.
Wonderful. And Gita? How about Ronaldo?
Here.
Good. And James. How about Deb?
I'm here.
Very good. And Tanya? And Lynette?
Present.
And Deb Gilchrist.
Oh, I thought that was the Deb you were talking to before.
Okay, I have a Deborah Galley.
Oh, that's the other Deb's here. Deb Gilchrist.
Okay, so Deb Gilchrist. How about Deborah Galley? Is she here? Okay. And Ron?
Yes, hello.
Very good. And Robin? And Lonnie?
Yep, I'm here.
Very good. And Tammy?
Here.
And Trudy?
I'm here.
And Heather?
Yes.
And Jay? All right. We have, we're talking stuff about the basic D&I behavioral styles. Before I get too deep into it, though, let's just check and see, are there any burning questions we have from our Monday session that you want to make sure you cover?
Hey, Dave, this is Selena.
Yes, Selena.
Can you send that recording to me? I have not had a chance to get on the emails to check it since I spaced out that session.
Okay. Yeah, I'll send the recording link out. I'm on the road right now. I'm traveling, and it's really hard to send out links from my iPad and iPhone.
Yeah.
But I'll send it out to you guys when I get home Friday night. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Very good. Any other burning questions?
Yeah, this is Phyllis, and I missed the roll call.
Oh, very good. Phyllis, I'll mark you here as present. Thank you very much. Anybody else not checked in?
Michelle Kadushin.
Oh, hi, Michelle. Good to have you here.
Hi, thank you.
Rochelle Krunick's here.
Oh, okay, Rochelle Krunick is here, too. Excellent. I'm still missing Gita and James. Deborah Galley, Tanya, Robin, and Jay. All right, let's go ahead and get into today's material because tonight's some really exciting stuff. Quick review of our first session, just keeping us all fresh. We talked about the history of DISC and the fact that it came out of the works of Dr. William Moulton Marston, but that he did not actually create the assessment. That was done in 1972 by researchers at the University of Minnesota. Actually, researchers there worked together on their profile for a while, and later they had a split, and the two PhDs who created the profile went different directions. A lot of those turned into some company called Carlson Learning. Another turned into a company called Target Training International. So TTI, Target Training International, still exists out there today, and they're an original DISC provider. Carlson Learning morphed several times into Inscape Publishing and now Wiley, which is what we're using here in class. So this, what we use here is a direct descendant of the original research done back in 1972. We talked about what DISC does and does not measure. Why is it important to know what DISC does not measure? Anybody know?
We won't be looking for something that's not going to be there. We won't be trying to help somebody based on information we don't have.
Exactly.
And that we're not going to get.
Yeah. So it tells you some of the reasons why the behaviors are, but not how smart that person is. So you try and measure intelligence off something like that, assuming that they think they're smart because they're a certain profile. It's not. It's all their behaviors. Good. We talked about the three graphs, the mask, which comes from most responses, the core, which comes from the least responses, and the mirror, which is the most minus the least, but the one that really most represents you to the general public. Talk about the reason to compare the three graphs, see if they're all the same general size and shape. Walk through the Johari window and the, you know, the arena, the mask, the blind spots, the potential, to kind of look at how to expand that arena as part of coaching and part of what DISC does in general. And we kind of introduced the behavioral style chart at a very high level last week, or last Monday. So, questions before I go on?
No question. Hey, Dave, this is Jay and Pep. I just want to let you know I'm on. I've been on.
Oh, very good, Jay. Thank you for checking in. I appreciate that.
Sorry about that. I was trying to say here. My mute button wasn't allowing me to do it. Sorry about that.
So the mute button works effectively. Good to know that, too. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So the behavioral style chart, keep that in front of you, if you will, for this entire session. It's an important tool. And we walked through it briefly last time. I want to walk through it again now. Then begin to show you how it works with behavioral styles of the D and the I tonight. So this is about the concepts of what DISC is made up of. And you can think about this in terms of how to identify someone's style. If they tend to be more active, more aggressive, more outgoing, more demonstrative, more louder. Those people tend to be on the upper part of that quadrant, the active style matrix. People tend to be a little quieter, a little more thoughtful, a little more introspective, a little more patient. They tend to be in the bottom half of that quadrant. So you have the active styles on top and the thoughtful styles on the bottom. The left-hand side tends to show a heavy task orientation, people who are questioning things about them, people who want to get things done, people who focus on getting results. That's what that left-hand side represents. The right-hand side are for the people who are more people-oriented, more accepting, more actually friendly, more outgoing. So all these things represent that right-hand side of the chart. And those four areas give us the four DISC quadrants. So if you think about this, one thing you can do if you ever do any group work is to get people in the center of the room and identify them by, are they active, fast-paced, aggressive, loud, those kind of things, and have them form to the front of the room. Then ask folks to, if they're more thoughtful, cautious, reserved, introspective, etc., let's go to the back of the room. You've now started basically putting these people into a DISC quadrant based on those kind of questions. You continue on by saying, if you are tend to be more task-oriented, more questioning, more to get results, more focused on answers, head off to the left-hand side of the room. People tend to be more people-oriented, accepting, friendly, softer. They go on the right-hand side of the room. You can identify people from the DISC quadrant. You can tell them. If you were in the front before, and now you're on the left, go to the left-hand corner, upper corner of the room. If you were in the front before, and now on the right-hand side, go to that upper right-hand corner of the room. If you were in the back before, and are now on the right-hand side, go to that right-hand corner of the room, lower-hand corner of the room. If you were on the left, if you were the bottom before, on the left-hand side, go to that lower quadrant. You can identify people's primary DISC behavioral pattern. And you can have them begin to do things, talk about themselves as groups based on that initial style. So I mentioned to you guys, it's a really good idea to look at this chart to memorize it, and learn to draw it yourself, and learn to draw it as you talk about it. Very powerful in helping people understand what DISC is about and why they should want to take the assessment and profile from you. You see the arrows on there? The arrows do show the opposite styles, the D versus the S, the I versus the C. But the main function of those arrows, the big important thing the arrows does, represent degrees. Because you can be much more active, you can be a little bit active, or medium active, or a whole lot active. You can be somewhat thoughtful, kind of thoughtful, really thoughtful. You can be kind of people-oriented, really people-oriented, kind of task-oriented, very task-oriented. These degrees represent how much, how far up the chart you are in terms of your D, your I, your S, or the C. So again, two people have the same basic high I behavioral style, for example, can be very different because one of them is very high on that I scale, one of them is above midpoint, but rather low. So it's not just the style itself, it's the degree that really is important in determining how they're going to behave. Okay, question about that before we get into our first style here?
Yeah, this is Deb Gilchrist. Now, you said the degree, and maybe I'm thinking to other types of graphs like this, but just by looking at the chart, there's no plotting on it or anything, so when we say they're a high C, we just kind of arbitrarily put them in one location on that and then someplace closer into the center on the opposite?
Good point. If you're talking about a group and you're trying to get them in the quadrants, you're going to have all the high C's together, for example. Some are going to be very high C's. Some are going to be more moderately high C's. The way to tell for sure, have them take the assessment and see where their dot really falls.
Okay, but I mean, I'm trying to figure out how you would plot it, how would you plot the dot on the chart here, on this graph.
Yeah, you wouldn't plot the dots on the chart, but to say which quadrant they fall into. We'll talk about how to plot their dots, actually, in our sixth session together. We'll go through the process to win that. Okay?
All right.
All right, very good. Other burning questions before I go on? All right. So let's talk about that upper left-hand quadrant, the active behavioral style that is very task-oriented or questioning. And we call these people the high D people. That D oftentimes stands, like we use it for driver, direct, decisive, dominant. This is a behavioral style that tends to want to get things done. So let me tell you a little bit about the high D here. So at their best, a high D is confident and self-assured. The high D tends to be natural leaders, and they're guys who are willing to charge the hill. They tend to be adventurous. They get bored very easily. They like to shake things up and do things differently. Change is part of who they really are. It's part of their natural makeup. And they're very willing to change things. They see a better way to do things. Very willing to change. They tend to be inquisitive, but they think when they're inquisitive, they already know the answer before they even ask the question. Okay? Let me tell you a little story here about Sam. So Sam is a fast-rising executive at a large multinational company. He has a reputation as someone who gets things done and gets results. He's always looking for better ways to get things done, and he oftentimes finds those better ways. Sam surrounds himself with talented, take-charge type people. He delegates to them because he trusts them and knows they'll get things done and get them done correctly. All right, so what's Sam's challenge? Well, his support from the executive team is somewhat thin, because while his results have been outstanding, he has not done a good job of building relationships among his peers or his superiors. No one thinks they really know who Sam is, and if the other executives are willing to trust him enough to promote him. So Sam may be your client with those kind of characteristics. Does that Sam guy sound familiar to you? Yeah. You know people who are like that? I think we all know some Sams, don't we? Some guys who are really kind of people who are guys or girls who are take charge people, get things done, but they don't build good relationships. Okay? And so that's what an ID can be like. Okay. Now, that's the high D at their best. Let's talk about the high D at their worst. So at their worst, the high D might appear to be aloof or even arrogant. They make demands of their subordinates, they recognize good performance, and they find fault, and they seldom give praise. The big opponents of change because they know better than everybody else does. Therefore, they make decisions unilaterally. They can appear to be cold and insensitive. They tend to communicate in short, loud bursts and seldom take the time to explain their decisions or get buy-in. Sound familiar to you guys, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the same guy who was confident and self-assured, natural leaders, okay, if those are quite, quote, the good high Ds, the bad high Ds, the ones who are arrogant and aloof. Both are going to have the same behavioral style, but they react differently because of their emotional intelligence, the ability to relate to people around them. So let me read you a story here about a bad high D, if you will. Who may be your client, by the way? So Susie's a VP at a mid-sized company. She's in charge of operations and uses her personal fiefdom. She came in from the outside with a resume that demonstrates one crowning achievement after another. And her old company refused to promote her. She's a problem solver, moves from one problem to the next, comes in like a tornado, eliminates underperformers and dead wood, improves the bottom line, and then goes on to our next assignment. The team below her lacks talent, and her success is almost always attributed to her strong will and determination. So what's her challenge? Well, Susie appears to be more than her welcome in operations, as some of the key employees have left the organization. There are other places for her to go in the organization, and she believes her skills are being underutilized. So that could be the high D client coming to you for help and assistance. So, what are your general thoughts on the good and the bad view of the high D?
Too driven.
They're too driven. Okay. And what do you mean by too driven? Is it not good to be driven?
What do you call it? Tunnel vision. With their actions. They're too focused on the target and not the journey. Or the
okay.
people in the car with them.
Yeah. So that bad high D may get so focused on getting things done, they forget about their team.
Yes.
Can you coach that high D into being more of a team player?
No.
You're a good team leader, not a good team player.
Yeah, they're probably more of a leader and they can delegate.
But they don't praise and they don't build and they don't develop. People.
Okay. Can they be taught to do those things, you think?
Yes.
With a good coach who understands these things like you guys are, they could be taught. But that challenging that bad high D, you have to get attention first, the purchaser first, to sit there and say, yeah, you need to change, and here's why. Okay? So, first of all, let's talk about... I'm sorry, go ahead.
The arrogant high D, they're probably, like, less prone to change. They're probably going to be the most resistant.
Yeah, that's a good point. That arrogant high D, when they call you to be your client, they're calling you because they're going to tell you, my boss told me to call you.
Right.
I don't think I need to try to help.
I don't think I need you, yeah.
Yeah, but I was told to call you, so I'm calling you because I was told to.
I have a task to finish, and I have to have it done by 8:30.
That's right. I need to make the changes in me, and I need to do it by Thursday. So, show me your coaching magic and hurry up about it.
Right. Well, and their arrogance probably at that point is more prone to turn into rudeness, too, because they're expecting you at that point to be able to give them answers just like that. And when you can't, then they're just going to be disappointed and more angry.
Well, they're going to say, that proves I was right all along. See, I didn't need a coach.
Oh, no, Dave, am I that bad?
I wasn't going to name names. All right, so let's take a step back here and say, suppose you're a high D and you are the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. First of all, can a high D be a good coach?
Yes.
Yeah.
What would make a high D a good coach? What would they bring to the party that would sit there and say, that person's a high D and they're a good coach because they do these things?
They're probably result-driven.
Yeah, they're going to be result-driven, exactly.
They hold the client to account.
Yes, again, really good point. They're going to make sure that client's accountable. So when the client tries to wiggle away, and he's going to sit there and say, whoa, come back here. Let's go back to what you said you're going to do. You said you're going to do these three things. You didn't do them.
Mm-hmm.
The other styles might be kind of say, well, you know, it's okay. You know, I know you tried. Yeah. Do or
there's
not do, there is no try.
Ways to do things. If at first you don't succeed, try again a different way until you find a better way.
Exactly. So, if the high D is a coach, they have to be careful of certain natural tendencies they're going to have as a coach. First thing you have to worry about is being too direct and off-putting, because they do want to get results. They want to get to the bottom line. They may go right for the change, if you're right for the jugular, as opposed to helping the client move in the way they need to move to make their changes.
Yeah, but you know what I'm thinking? They don't listen, a high D. They don't listen as much because they've got their ideas in their head and they're moving forward. So I think a good coach needs to be able to listen.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Can the high D be taught to listen?
Yes.
I think anybody can be taught, but the question is their willingness, especially if they're arrogant or aloof. How willing are they?
Yeah. They're confident and self-assured. Maybe they're willing to listen. They're arrogant and aloof. Maybe they're not willing to listen.
Right.
Yeah. So high Ds, because they tend to be focused on results and actions, they might miss the emotional undertones that comes out in the coaching session.
Mm-hmm.
They focus on the task have to get done, not the emotion behind it. Yeah. So that's what the D should be careful if they're going to be a coach. Some of you guys out there are high Ds and are going to want to be coaches. So these are things you want to watch for. The high
with yourself
D might
or with
find some things they should watch for in themselves that they might try and force on the client.
Okay.
Okay. For example, they may take that client and they may see where things are going, may try and force that client into a shift before they're ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to focus on the tasks and the actions that get done and not on the emotion beneath those tasks and actions. So that's kind of like putting a Band-Aid on things. You got these tasks done, but I didn't solve the real problem, which is why do you feel so bad about this? Okay? The high D, all high Ds believe they're smart, by the way. Now, we mentioned before that we don't measure intelligence. So a high D who's smart and is, you know, confident and self-assured is a good D to be around. A high D who is not intelligent but arrogant and aloof is an unpleasant person to be around. Okay? The high D, because they focus on results. I'm sorry, go ahead. Is there a question? The high D, because they focus on results, they may expect certain things to happen. They may not check in as the accountability partner because they assume you do what you're supposed to do. So if you're a high D and a coach, watch the behaviors in yourself as you deal with your clients. Question before I go on?
Yes, on the page after the second bullet, may miss what?
I'm sorry, say again, please.
Okay, the first bullet can be too direct and off-putting, and then the
right.
Natural tendencies may miss the something.
The emotional undertones.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, let's picture the high D as our client. Okay? So, as our client, there's some natural things that a high D brings to the relationship that are really good, that you can really enjoy working with. For example, a high D tends to be action-oriented. Therefore, they've got a problem, they're going to try and find a solution and want to get things done. So they don't hem and haw from a high D. They're going like, if this is my problem, I think I need to do these things for the answer. And they're willing to try those things. And by the way, if they try these things and they don't work, they're not going to worry about the fact that it was a mistake. They go, oh, that didn't work. I'll try something else. So that's a real strength of having a high D as a client. They want to get things done. They want to make things happen. If they're there because they called you and they wanted to call you, they want to change. They want to get results. They want to do things to make themselves better. Now, there are also some blind spots that you have to watch for with that high D client. And they, you know, high Ds don't view themselves generally as unpleasant people, let's just use that nice term. But others may view them that way. And because they're not tuned into emotions, they may not be aware of how others are perceiving them. Likewise, if they're dealing with other people and they're giving feedback to someone who's on their team, talking about some problems, they may be upsetting that person deeply and not even realize it because they're not aware of the emotions of other people around them. They focus on the task, not on the emotion. So when you deal with your client, you're talking about actions they're going to take, you might ask questions like, okay, so if you do these three things and you're dealing with Betty, who's your problem employee, how's she going to feel about that? To make them stop and think about how others are going to react to what it is they're trying to do. Okay? They also have a challenge with interacting with others. They can make demands of other people rather than making requests of them. So saying to someone, can you get this thing done between by 3 o'clock? They may come back and say, need this by 3, get it done. And they don't view it as being arbitrary, but it certainly comes across that way. It comes across as harsh. They mean well, but the behavior comes out much more direct than is really playing through in their own mind. Yeah, as a general rule, D's tend to use less words than some of the other styles. So they don't explain the reasons behind what they're asking you to do or the emotion behind what they're asking you to do. They just tell you to get it done because they think you understand. You need to get this done. Therefore, go do it. D's don't like being told what to do. And they will resent people trying to tell them what to do. So picture a D boss working for a D employee. A D employee. One D wants to give you the tell people how to do things. The D underneath is like, I like being told what to do. So that can be a real challenge. So when you're coaching the high D, some of the challenges are, first of all, we mentioned before, they may not think they need coaching. When I get a call from someone who says, my boss told me to call you, I don't know why, I can almost guarantee right up top, that's a high D. Because they don't think they need coaching, they think they're just fine because they're getting results. A high D also tends to act before they think. And so even in your session, you'll hear them put together their action plans that are focused on what they need to do, not how it's going to impact others around them. And they'll use the words in the session that I come across as too harsh. And they may view coaching as something that is soft and therefore not measurable, not tangible, and therefore not real.
Did you say view coaching as soft, S-O-F-T?
Yes, S-O-F-T, soft.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not concrete. I can't measure the results. This not ain't good to me. Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, don't forget here, we have the high D who is not emotionally intelligent, at their worst, if you will. The high D who is emotionally intelligent at their best. So the same behavioral style can react two different ways based on their understanding of themselves, what their challenges are, and what needs to happen. Questions before I go on? You guys have a clear view of what a high D might look like at their best and at their worst?
Yeah, my ex.
Your ex. I'm going to guess high D without emotional intelligence. I'm going to just guess that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Ds can be tremendous leaders. They can really help to get things done. People will love to follow them. If that D is emotionally intelligent and aware and thinks to themselves about what they're going to say, how they're going to say it, to make things happen the right way versus being the proverbial bull in the china shop. Okay?
Okay.
Now, some questions to ask the high D. What are you going to do about this? Now, they love that question because it implies action. I'm going to do this. The high D is very action-oriented. And so when you say, what are you going to do? They love that question. They're going to spring into action and say, I'm going to do these three things to solve this problem. Great. Okay? Now, you also want to ask them, when you do those three things, how will that impact others around you? Because you know what? Part. They thought about what they had to get done, but not how it's going to impact others around them. At their best, they're going to sit there and say, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Let me think. At their worst, they're going to sit there and say, who cares? I got to get these things done. Who cares how it impacts them? I got to get these things done. Ask the high D, are there other alternatives? Because they tend to be creative behavioral style, and they'll sit there and say, yeah, I can do these things. Are there other alternatives? Yeah, I could probably do this or this as well. And help them sort through those options and find the best one as opposed to the first one that comes to their mind. So challenge the high D to go a little deeper. Ask the high D, what do you need as a result? Because they tend to think in terms of results. And what's the outcome going to look like here? And you can make sure that the outcome they're trying to get to is in sync with what they're going to take for themselves and for others. So they relate very well to that question, what do you need as a result? When can you do this? Sorry, go ahead.
Would a high D that has, because they lack, like we're talking about, the emotion, do the results change if the, you know, if their emotion is lacking?
I don't know if the results change as much as the way they get there is going to change.
Okay.
They know what the result's supposed to be, and the high D with a low emotional intelligence quotient, they're going to take the shortest path there and stop anybody who's in their way to get there.
Right.
But the high D who's more emotionally aware is going to sit there and say, okay, well, I'm going to do these three things. How will that impact others? Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Well, let me see here. Maybe I should do this way. Or this way. Maybe what should I say to make this effective when I do this? And you can actually help coach the D with the words to use to make them aware of the emotions and lessen the impact on others around them.
Mm. Okay.
Make sense?
Good. Yes, I love it.
And lastly, when can you do this? ID loves that kind of question. It ties right back into the results. They're going to love you for asking that kind of question. They'll give you a direct answer. I'll do it by Thursday. You know what? They will do it by Thursday. Because the ID gets that kind of results. All right. You got a good picture of the ID?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do you want to coach a ID?
I think that they would present almost an incredible challenge. It might be hard, but in the end, it might be quite rewarding to say that you did it.
Yeah. With a high D, you can really see, if you do a coach with a high D, you really might see some really great results. If they're aware mm-hmm. of the change, they want to do these things happen, they're going to drive to get it done.
Yep.
Yeah. Other questions or comments on the high D before we go on to the high I?
Go ahead.
It's like the high D seems, based on my past experience, the high D is like the military leader, you know, the general, Patton. Go do it, do it, do it. And then being able to take care of his people, that's another thing, and that's something where I think that'd be the great thing about the challenge of the high D is not only respect the rank, but respect the person.
That's actually a really good analogy with George Patton because he was a high D. But if you look, remember, just go back, you can see it in the movie. If you read the history of Patton, you'll see it too. But even in the movie about Patton, he goes to the hospitals and prays for them because he really does care about them. He drives them hard because he says, if I drive you hard, I'll save more lives in the long run. But that's what I really have to do.
Yeah, so that's a Heidi yeah. who's also in touch with why he knows the why, and he shares the why.
Exactly, exactly. But was he loved? Let me tell you, my uncle fought with Patton in his third army. Yeah, he wasn't loved by his men. He was respected.
And that's what he wanted, the respect. That's what he was looking for, is the respect. And in that situation, that's what you need, is the respect.
Exactly.
And not just this respect for the rank, but the respect for the person.
Yep. He also, stock traders, working on Wall Street, quick decision makers, instant, just boom, boom, boom. Where you wouldn't
yeah.
have somebody spending 14 hours trying to decide if they're going to buy or sell.
You have minutes to make that decision.
Right.
So a high D is going to be a quick decision maker. They're going to have confidence in what they do. If they're wrong, because if it's like, well, that didn't work, I'll try something else now. And they'll change. They don't get married. And if they make a mistake, they don't worry about it too much. They just go on.
When you're doing coaching certification, one of the things is that you determine if a client is coachable or not. With the low D, is it the low D that lacks that has a low EQ? What do you think is a decent time frame to decide if they are coachable?
If you're an experienced coach, you can pretty well tell right away. If you're not experienced and you take a high D on, you'll be able to tell within the first four sessions, I would tell you.
Okay.
Because it'll all be tasks, and especially about the emotional side, will hit upon barren rock, and they won't care about that. You can say, yeah, so you know what? I don't think you're really coachable for me here.
Okay. So it's the high D. I just got confused for a second. But so you just clarified it's the high D that has a low emotional quotient.
No.
The high D.
There's the high D.
Is the behavioral style that says I'm action oriented. The high
okay.
D with a high emotional intelligence is going to be the one who's confident, but still approachable. The
okay.
high D with a lower emotional intelligence is going to be arrogant and aloof.
Okay,
okay.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Good. All right. Let's move on to that upper right-hand quadrant, the high I. Influencing, interactive, interested in people. So again, at their best, a high I behavioral style is upbeat, they're energetic, they are master communicators. Keep you enthralled for hours with their stories. They can sell ice to the Eskimos. They are natural leaders. Their excitement and energy is contagious. And it spreads well to everyone who meets them, loves them because they're just contagious. People love to be around the high eye. They're quick to smile. They're quick with a joke. We can have fun either at work or away from work. They just want to have fun in general. They have good instincts about people, and they surround themselves with people who are anxious to make a difference, just like they are. Their natural charm and powers of persuasion make them peacemakers at home or at the office. When they go out to have a good time, which they do routinely, they're the center of attention, and people gather around them, and everyone knows who they are because, oh, yeah, look who's over there drawing all the attention. That's the high high. No folks who are like
that?
So
those are the ones those are the ones that are always wearing the lampshade at parties.
They are indeed wearing a lampshade at a party.
Absolutely. All right. I'll tell you a story about Susie. She seems to have found a home in marketing and advertising. She's full of creative ideas. She makes good connections with her customers. We love her flexibility. She likes to travel for her new job. Her work is unstructured, which is fine. That fits her personality perfectly. And she likes working with a few of the people who are creative, walking through their creative space. They walk around, they bounce ideas off each other, and they're always laughing and talking, lots of energy. Now, as a manager, all this paperwork has to get done. But that can easily, you can do those things and recharge her batteries by going after work with friends after work and having a few drinks. Right. So what's Susie's challenge here? Well, managing the budgets for all these projects does not play to her strengths. And that project-by-project cost analysis, the county wants her to do, this has to wait because she's not really in the mood to do it. She doesn't like paperwork. That interferes with her ability to get things done, her ability to be creative. Besides, after work last night, she made three new, brand-new best friends for life. Okay? So that's what you may see in high eye who comes to you and says, yeah, you have all these great things going on. I need some coaching around. Probably some of these other things done that have to get done for me to keep my job effectively. So does Susie sound like someone you might know?
Yes.
Too well.
Yeah. You know when you like them because they're so much fun to be around. All right. Now, just like the high D, yeah, the high D at their best, not their worst. So here's the high I at their worst. They come across as unorganized, unfocused, and more than a little bit shallow. Their stories are amusing. They often center around that person themselves. Other people in the stories are delegated to secondary roles and unimportant roles. Okay? Their work is haphazard. They don't follow up on their assignments unless people remind them to do that. They are so optimistic, always so upbeat that they are unrealistic and create unachievable, unrealistic goals. They trust their employees to do the right thing without regard to their employees' level of skill. They're slow to acknowledge hard mistakes because they have an unshakable faith in the people around them. That's the same high-eye behavioral style we had a minute ago, but this is them in a negative light, in a different perception of them. All right? So does that high-eye style sound familiar to you as well? Does the folks look like that a little bit?
I'm sure indirectly I've come across people with the low I.
Yeah. They have all these characteristics, but you sit there and say, yeah, you know what, they're fun, I just don't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're
also low.
The jock that never grew up.
Development.
There you go, someone who never grew up, exactly. Yeah.
But there are some high I's who do not have some of these negative traits. They've got. I'm talking about myself.
No, I mean that's a good point because I was thinking along the same line. One of my thoughts is I know high eyes who are super organized and very detail oriented. So when you have someone who's like a high eye, that many of the things that you've mentioned are not their weaknesses, how do you manage through that part of it? How do you adapt this model to address those positive characteristics?
So a couple things here. Keep in mind, first of all, I give you two examples of high eye at their best and at their worst. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same behavioral style, but one is, has a high emotional intelligence and awareness of themselves, the other one has a lower emotional intelligence and awareness of themselves. Okay? So the first thing is, they're both high eyes, but their perception of people around them is different because of the way they behave, the way they use that high eye to their advantage or disadvantage. Now, second thing is, we'll talk about this more in coming sessions, but people are usually not just one of these four letters. They're not usually just a D, an I, an S, or a C. Usually there are at least two of those letters. So they may be a high I, outgoing, bubbly, fun to be around, and a high C combined with that, attention to detail, getting things done, make sure things are done right. Okay?
Yeah, it sounds like we might need to be careful about judging based on one letter and assuming things about people until we
see. I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that the other thing that we have to make sure we do, I would say even in using this disc, is that we couple it with the EQ. Because what you're talking about, Dave, when you say it is that high EQ versus low EQ, that's not a measure we'll get from just using the disc. So we need to do the disc and an EQ assessment, I think. And maybe that gives us a better set of insight. Okay.
Yeah, as a coach, you're going to be able to figure out the EQ level really pretty quickly yourself. The EQ assessment, and by the way, I love Dr. Belston's assessment of EQ, is much more for the client than it is for the coach. Because the coach can tell right away if the person is energetic and upbeat or disorganized, unfocused, and shallow. We can tell right away.
Help me one more time. But Dave, could you repeat the Dr. Who's version of the EQ?
Oh, Dr. Laura Belston.
Laura Belston, thank you.
Yeah, she's the one who does it through CTA. Yeah.
Oh, she does the special and emotional intelligence thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. She has a great class of emotional intelligence, and she has her own profile and assessment, and it's extremely well put together.
Yeah.
So just take a step back here. Keep in mind as we go through each of these styles, the D, the I, the S, and the C, I'm giving you both the high D at their best and the high D at their worst. The high I at their best, the high I at their worst. So you may have two people who have identical profiles. One of them is a high I at their best. One of them is a high I at their worst. Their profile from this perspective looks the same, because it measures their behaviors, not their emotional intelligence. But you'll see that by how folks react to them and how you react to them. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's walk through the idea of the high I as the coach. Okay? So if you're a high I and you're a coach, the things you need to be aware of yourself to make sure that you're doing coaching effectively, okay? First of all, the high I may not challenge the client to do more. They may accept something less than perfection or less than great from the client because they want to be liked by the client. They also can be tempted to tell their own personal stories to make a point to the client. The client really doesn't care about. Because the client's focused on who?
Them.
The client.
The client.
Yeah. So the higher coach may make it about themselves as opposed to about the client. They also may just tend to chat with the client, have a really interesting chat that's really fascinating and full of interesting discussions, but not really coach them. They also may tend to ask really long, involved questions because the high I tends to be very verbal. And they make their questions short and open and direct. Questions make it to be rather long and involved and complicated. And as a coach, they may do more talking than listening. So they've got to be aware of how much they're talking and how much they're really listening. Okay? Again, these can all be overcome if you're aware of your technical tendencies as a coach. But things you should watch out for because, again, it comes natural for you to do these kind of things. All right. Now, if the high I is the client, there are some natural strengths. First of all, you talk to the high I client, they're optimistic and they're upbeat. That's great to have around. That makes the sessions fun. And they're going to be open with you in the session. They don't try and hide things. They'll talk about all kinds of stuff. Now, they have some natural blind spots. They're overly optimistic. So, when can you finish these 47 tasks you have to get done? Oh, tomorrow morning. I'll get them done by 9 a.m. There are 47 things to get done. Well, yeah, but I'll work on them tonight. Okay. So you have to take that optimism and say, okay, let's channel optimism to something we can, that's more realistic. Okay? The high I may give you all this great talk. You check back a week later, they're like, so what did you actually get done? Well, I had these great meetings and these great ideas. We had three tasks to get done. Did you get these three tasks done? Well, you know, those are really good things I'm not really sure we need to do because of, they talk a great game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes it to me more talk than action. So you have to keep the high eye in line. Being that accountability partner. Make sure the good thing's done. Okay? Now, high eyes have a tendency to want to be liked by others.
Go ahead. Hi, Dave. I'm sorry. I came off of mute too slow. You moved on, and I was trying to get there quick enough. I wanted to understand, so do they tend to, one of the tendencies, I guess, that I'm thinking, I'm hearing, is they tend to take on more than what they can actually accomplish, if we consider, you know, kind of a combined thing, right? You're saying, talk the talk, but do they actually walk the walk? Do they actually get it done? How do we get them to be accountable? Is some of that challenge around accountability associated with a tendency to take on more than what can actually be accomplished based on the resources
Absolutely.
They have available? Okay.
High eyes love to say yes because they want to be accommodated. They want to help. They want to be liked. So they say yes to everything. Yeah, you can't do everything. I know you want to, but you really can't. Okay? The high eyes may have a challenge with interacting with other people because they have such a thing they want to be liked. They may avoid conflict. And they may go into great length to avoid conflict. And you're saying, look, this is an issue you have with your employer, employee, spouse, whatever. You talked about it. Well, I'm going to talk to them about it. I'm sure I will. But they are so terrified of that actual discussion that they'll find all kinds of reasons not to have it. Okay? Now, also with a client who's a high I, they may talk to you and go off into the weeds someplace on their discussion. They run on a path to you about a particular problem. Next thing you know, you're hearing about the vacation they took in Bermuda. You're going, whoa, how'd you get from the problem you had with your employee to Bermuda? I don't see how you got there. So you got to kind of keep them on track. You have to be afraid, not be afraid to sit there and say, whoa, stop. Where are you going? We're over here. Come back to this discussion over here. Okay? That may come across as a little rude sometimes, but you got to reel them in or they'll wander away.
But I think that they would appreciate that more.
If they really want results, they will. If they're looking for you to just make them feel good, they might not.
Thanks,
Ben. Yeah. All right. So, challenges of coaching the high I, too many number one priorities. We'll sit there and tell you. These are all number one priorities. There's 47 of them. I once had a boss with a high I who said, here are 67 things we have to get done over the next 3 months. I said, what's the biggest priority on it? He goes, they're all number one priorities. Okay. 67 number one priorities? I mean, that means nothing's really important because they're all, quote, number one priorities. Okay. Also a challenge, they may not understand how others perceive them. If they're perceived as overly optimistic, they're perceived as being out in the clouds someplace, they may not see that. They may view themselves as being loved, even though they're really not. And they need to talk. And that need to talk can get in the way of taking action to help correct things, make things better. Or say they wander up into the weeds someplace where they're talking because they need to talk, but it's not any place close to where you're trying to get to in terms of helping them get the results they need. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, questions to ask the high eye. How does this make you feel? They'll love that question. They're very feeling people. They want to tell you how it makes them feel. So they're going to love you when you ask them that question. Ask the question, what's going to go wrong here? A question they don't like, but you need to ask. Because they're so optimistic, they may bypass all the things that could have them go wrong. So when they
could you restate that question, Dave? The question?
What
they don't like?
What could go wrong? What could go wrong here?
Oh, what could go wrong? Thank you.
Yeah. Because they may not have thought of things can go wrong, but things can go wrong. If it goes wrong, what are you going to do about it? Yeah.
Are those, like, the people that are more, like, they're hoping you'll give them the answers to their problems instead of, you know,
well, they may think they have the answers to the things that may be wrong with that particular answer. I'll do these four things. Okay, if those four things don't work, though, or if those four things have bad results, what's going to happen then? Oh, well, it won't go wrong. Suppose it does go wrong. Yeah, they don't think about what could go wrong because they're so optimistic it's all going to go right. They don't take into account the downsides. All right. The question to ask the high eye, does it matter what others think? The high eyes tend to think that everything matters what others think. But sometimes, you know, it doesn't matter what others think. You need to do things for yourself. And they're sort of about the perception of others around them that they may sit there and do the wrong things because they're worried about what others think. Does it matter what they think? Yeah, maybe it doesn't matter what they think.
Hello?
Yes?
I'm so sorry about that. I'm back. This is Selena.
Okay. Okay. When can you, for the big important word, realistically accomplish this? Which before, they'll say they'd do 27 things by tomorrow morning. Yeah, how about we spend a little more time getting these things done? Listen, to the coaching discussion is important. Okay? And last but certainly not least, how will you know if it worked? If you do these three things and they get the, you know, what results do you have to know it actually worked properly? So, those are questions to ask the high eye. Questions, comment about the high eye. There's a lot there, isn't there?
Yes. Now, if before you said that the high eye, the opposite would be the C, is that
right.
Always the case? Well, could the opposite be, you know?
Well, the high eye is active and people-oriented.
Okay.
By definition, the C is thoughtful and reserved and task-oriented. That's why they're the opposites.
Oh, okay. That's why that's opposite. Okay. So those usually are opposite, those two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and the same is true of the D and the S, because the D is active and task-oriented, and the C is thoughtful. The D and the S. The D is active and task-oriented. The S is thoughtful and people-oriented.
Okay, good. All right.
By the way, that could be a perfect complement to each other if they see eye to eye and agree on other key things, the size, the behavioral, disc behavioral style. They can work together extremely well because they bring the table. Between all four of them, between both of them, they bring together all four styles into the table.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay.
And they buffer
Questions.
Each other.
Yes, they can. Yeah, they can buffer each other.
Hey, don't say it like that. Slow down. One behind. Okay, and that guy's name is, and that girl's name is. Now, remember, that's his wife, and that's...
Yeah. Exactly, because the C's not thinking that way, or the D's thinking that way. They're thinking about what to get done, and they go like, oh, yeah, so you're married to this person. Okay. Now what to think about. All right.
So, Dave, you're going to give us the both classes, recordings of the both classes on Friday?
Yeah, I've got, there's a website set up for the recordings. I just can't send a mass email out from my iPad, and I'm traveling for this funeral right now, so I'll be back in the office on Friday afternoon, Friday evening, et cetera. I'll send you things out to you. Then you'll have all the recordings for all the classes will be out there on the same website for you.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Yep.
All right. So we're going to discuss the S and the C in our class next Monday night.
Yes. For Monday. Do we have coming forward, I guess, I'm not sure the syllabus, but I'm not sure if I got everything on, and I apologize, that's me just kind of taking a swag through my email. Will we discuss the kind of combinations that we talked about that you mentioned as a response to one of my questions earlier going forward?
Actually, yeah, sessions 4 and 5 focus on the combinations.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Because those are really very important.
Pretty much.
So, is there another question?
This is Lena. I kept having problems with my phone for some reason, so I unfortunately missed some of what you were saying. Can you just tell me again what the low eyes are?
You mean the high eye with low emotional intelligence?
Yes.
Yeah, so they're viewed as overly optimistic.
Okay.
They're viewed as unorganized, unfocused, shallow. You pretend to care, but I don't think you really do care about me. Okay? They're very self-centered, very self-focused. And they don't try and produce quality work. Say goodbye on their personality only. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, guys. Well, that concludes
tonight's
discussion.
Can I ask you one quick question, Dave?
Oh, sure.
Sorry. What do you do, or maybe this is covered later and just tell me this, what do you do when someone disagrees with their score?
Agrees with my what?
Disagrees with what
disagrees.
The result, yes, of the disc.
Okay, that's a really good point. We go through the profile. First thing we tell them is that, of course, that this is a self-profile, so you answered the question. It's not what I thought of you, it's what you said about yourself.
right.
Well, when we read through the page that has all the descriptions on there, I tell people, read all these words, and if you think this is, you say to yourself, wow, this is really me, by these words, put a check mark next to those words. to read those words and go, you know, I'm not really sure it's likely. I'm not, you know, I'm just not sure. Put a question mark next to it. To read the words and go like, nope, that is not me. I tell them, scratch it out. Okay? Because,
okay.
You know, this is a tool. It's not an all-knowing, detailed, you know, 15 hours of psychoanalysis result of a study. So if it doesn't match you, scratch it out. Okay?
Okay, good.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Anything else for tonight, ladies and gentlemen?
Nope.
No, but I really enjoyed it. Thank you. I'm looking forward to the rest of the classes.
That's great. Thanks, Steve.
It's a great pleasure. I love using this. All right.
Thank you.
Everybody have a great week. We'll talk to you guys all next Monday.